Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Maria, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Philly. Yeah, I'm okay, thank you.
Well, I wonder how you can be okay. People are, even though it's 9 years or so ago now since Alicia, your daughter, was murdered, people are going to be shocked when they're reminded of this case, because it really was a horrifying, horrifying case. The man who murdered Alicia, John Geary, is up for parole now. Tell me, when that happens, how much do you learn about the parole process? Can you have any input into it?
Well, if I could just say, he actually had his first parole review just over a year ago. It's only just in the last 5 months that we got a reply to that parole review.
Parole was obviously turned down on that occasion.
But yeah, obviously, and I think everybody knows the first one is probably highly likely going to be refused. It's kind of what makes the 7-year parole review a bit of a unnecessary re-traumatising of family, if you ask myself.
Okay, and do you get a phone call, or do you get a letter, or do you get any kind of a notification that this is coming up?
Well, I think some may get a phone call. I actually got the letter, and that was because I changed my phone number and maybe I hadn't updated my details with the parole board, so, you know, I went...
Okay, and what did the letter say?
It just says that Geary was up for his 7-year parole review in the following months, and that we was invited to submit our feelings on, basically, they don't put it in the way of why you would hope that he didn't get parole, but just about our experience since the murder of Alicia.
And what did you do? What action did you take?
I spent months writing. About 2 months, I wrote quite a few, and in the end, I thought, no, I'm not going to respond to this one because I just wasn't ready for it. I just can't imagine just finding your feet again and finding the laughter in your life again after, you know, it was only... No, I would say it's only 4 years. He gets a 7-year review, but what people may not understand is that goes from the moment that they were remanded. So for us, we had to wait 3 years before all of the judicial process, the trial, and then the coroner's report. So, you know, we just spent 3 years after Alicia's, on the homicide of Alicia, you know, just waiting to get to a stage in the life where we can put that bit behind us and start moving on. And living a life rather than kind of just feeling so on edge and scared, fearful, all kinds of emotions, just waiting for the whole trial process to go through.
What did you write in the letter that you didn't send, or all those letters that you tried writing? What did you say?
Okay, so there was, you know, that he'd taken the innocence from my family's life. You know, the peace from my family's life, not only had he taken Alicia away from us, it was just, like, everybody will always say the same about the child, you know, she's just a wonderful person to be around. She was kind and considerate, thoughtful, just, you know, she was a great person and we miss her deeply. And, you know, I wanted to say to him, how dare you just even take this opportunity to take this parole. You know, you're not giving us any word of sorry in putting us through a parole review at this point, you know, because he murdered 4 people, two women and 2 children. You know, what if myself, you know, trying to be imagining being somebody who would murder somebody, you know, I'd feel a great responsibility for the harm that I'd caused the families. And I wouldn't want to put the family through the whole thought of them ever coming out of prison, ever.
Alicia was John Geary's ex-partner, Sarah's, good friend.
Yeah.
And he murdered not just Alicia, but Sarah and the 2 children, Amy and Reese. Amy was only a couple of months old, wasn't she?
5 months old baby. such a beautiful, beautiful child. They both were lovely, lovely kids, just like anybody's kids. Just gorgeous, innocent.
All murders are absolutely horrific and terrible things, but there's something about the circumstances of this murder that just elevated it out of the rank and file homicides.
Yeah, it was a domestic homicide right from the beginning. You know, if you look back at some, incidentally, you know, on that day, there was two more children's bodies found in Cork. There was four children murdered in one day in Ireland, and two women one day in Ireland, and a suicide. But, you know, you imagine, it wasn't even just in Ireland, it was in Munster, you know, and you just think of the population, four children, two mothers and two women murdered, you know.
Remind me what happened here. Alicia had taken the older child, Reese, out to the shops.
Yeah. Just like a normal day, just taking him down to town to get some messages and, you know, some bits of food and that.
Leaving Sarah with Amy in John's company.
At that moment, John wasn't there, actually, you know. We don't know the whole story, but we was kind of informed by the Gardaí just moments before the trial what was likely to come up, etc. And from what I remember, he had actually been waiting outside of the house, and Alicia had left, and he then came, knocked on the door and came in. And, you know, as it goes, you know, it's so traumatic to say these things, you know, but, like, you know, apparently, like, just I'd had a fag in the toilet, walked out of the toilet, and Sarah was standing there washing dishes, and he stabbed her in the back. Which, to me, you know, just that whole thing there, that she never saw that threat coming. You know, he valued her life so much that he stabbed her in the back. And there was, you know, all four of them had multiple injuries, and there was multiple weapons used. Didn't need to know any more than that.
Alicia would have walked back in to find her friend Sarah dead and presumably baby Amy dead as well.
Well, from what we was told, they believed that Alicia thought that Amy was alive and that John was sat on the settee holding the baby, and that she tried to take the baby off her, off John. And, you know, they got into some kind of fight, and Alicia, she actually just bled out from her injuries. She didn't, it wasn't instant. She just bled to death. And then he murdered little Reese, 3 years old, seeing his mum dead, and his sister, and seen Alicia to be murdered. And he had, and he thought it was okay to try for a 7-year parole.
Oh, God. And even though there was never any doubt about who did it, the guards weren't looking for anybody else, it was strung out, wasn't it, until the steps of the court when he changed his plea to guilty.
Right to the point where they were just bringing the jury in to swear them in, yeah. And then there was a bit of chaos, and he pleaded guilty, which I'm grateful for in one way, but they're still, they still don't know their story. You know, we just know what science can tell us or what we can read in the media. You know, and I think that given, you know, it's been a few years now, Safe Ireland and Women's Aid had introduced me to what a DHR was, which is a domestic homicide review. And, you know, good back there, you know, right at the beginning when I was looking on the criminal and the statistics, you know, the central statistics, and I was looking at the homicide rates, and you see that the 70 people are murdered in 1 year, and there's no information. I was like, well, how many of those are domestic homicides? How many of those were criminal, you know, or a fight in the pub? So, you know, DHR, would be a great opportunity for those who follow us to know and for people within communities to know the full story of what everybody, because there's so many clues within a community. People witnessed the perpetrator saying he was going to murder, like John Geary had threatened to murder Sarah on a number of occasions. Now it's 9 years, you know, had we had DHRs all this time, we would know quite a lot about what families have in common with domestic homicide. Like, we heard Micheál speak on Friday.
Maria, I read what at first sounds like quite a cold, dry statistic, but I wonder, does it resonate with you, that in the wake of any homicide, that in the circle of immediate friends and family, that one out of 19 people will end up suffering from quite an intense, quite a serious level of post-traumatic stress disorder. What have been the ripple effects on the mental and the emotional health of everybody who knew Alicia?
You know, that myself, I'm diagnosed with post-traumatic stress. Now, you know, life's good most of the time, but, you know, you hear that news, the body of a woman has been found, or, you know, the family. I remember a particular bad time which took me really backwards when Claudia Hall was murdered. And I just, you know, the bodies of four, five, wasn't it? You know, and it was like, just to take you back there. And and the fear is not just, it's not just about playing back that your child was murdered. It's actually thinking about the families. What have they got to face?
Sorry, Maria, you broke up there a little bit. It's not just about the child being murdered. It's what?
It's what the family have got ahead of them. You know, homicide is only the start of your torment. You know, like we talked about the trial and waiting for trial. If you don't get a trial, waiting for coroners. You know, there's a lot of waiting. A lot of waiting, and there isn't really, there isn't the greatest support. I mean, support after homicide, they were fabulous with me, and Women's Aid and Safe Islands, they've always been good, but on the level of what the Justice Department could do to help families, I think, you know, that we should kind of have a right to be able to talk about, like, when paroles are coming up, to talk just to get off your chest so that you can be coherent in what you want to say, rather than it just being an emotional outrage.
Well, of course, though, I completely understand, because, I mean, if you're saying that the news of other events coming into you on the 6-1 or the 9 o'clock at night is going to be an emotional trigger for you, this letter from the parole board landing on your doormat is obviously going to be a huge trigger.
It's massive. You can't imagine, even though I knew it was coming, it's almost, it just knocks the wind out of you, absolutely knocks the wind out of you. It just takes the happiness that you just found in your life. You know, it was only within, like, the last year that I'd been laughing naturally myself, you know, rather than, like, just, like, you know, forcing a laugh out, you know, that we was myself, you know, I talked to myself, you know, that I started to feel some joy in life, although I'd had joy in life, we got children and it was great, but it's this kind of feeling of, I can't describe, it's just like you're in shock, you're frozen, your kids, we just did lots of painting and drawing and did a lot of creative things together, dancing and such like. But it's just like being in two places sometimes and in one moment.
How does it feel to you living what is in effect a life sentence with the grief of Alicia, knowing that this man is first up for parole 7 years after being taken in on remand?
I can't find the words to explain how it is, because it just, you know, when I work back, when I've tried to explain before, there's so much trigger, you know, there's so much that I would like to say, but I can't find the words. You know, and when you say it's a life sentence of a loss of Alicia, but it's also a life sentence that we're tied to him. And I think that's what doesn't get out there. Mm. It doesn't matter how you don't, I don't think of him. I don't want to be attached to him, but he is attached to us.
And when you're a bit cranky or a bit withdrawn or irritable, all very understandable, particularly for somebody who's coping with PTSD as well. Do people understand, or do people just want you to get on with your life and be the normal Maria?
I've got to say, you know, friends around us are great and supportive. But, you know, as I try to communicate, you know, say people outside of our family, maybe outside in Ireland, who think, you know, it's 9 years, you should be just getting on. You know, very often you just do not hear about all of the other little things that have happened to you that you forgive. You know, you've just been talking, hearing the conversations going on there. You know, we have just like things like, somebody selling photographs of your children on the internet who were, when they were at the funeral. It's like, you know, you get up, you carry that and you go on, but it's just like these little chips as you go on through life. Nothing's changed in the judicial system. There's nothing changed with the reaction to victims of homicide or even serious sexual crime. You know, you're just seeing that there's no movement away to make a more victim-focused justice system. You know, we're here with the country that we live in and the society that we live in. He has his right to be rehabilitated, and the government has the responsibility to make sure that they do, because there's no use him coming out being a worse person than when he went in.
Mm.
But the whole thought processing of how victims become almost lost to their right to be rehabilitated, to have a fair chance to become a different person within the future. It is at the expense of us just like accepting, like Kira Campbell's family have to accept that he's going to have days with his family, to be held by his family. But you're not going to have that yourself. Nobody's going to bring him back for a day so you can hold him.
Maria, do we in media get this wrong as well, the way that we deal with it not being victim-centred enough?
I think so.
Because
we do
focus on the murderer, and we do focus on what possibly was his motivation, why did he do this, what led him to do this, when we should really more properly be saying, I wonder what the hell's going on with Maria Dempsey right now.
Yeah, you know, I think that this is apparent, and I think you can understand the whole concept of waiters in relation to trial and everything like that. You know, that's on trial. You know, it's a crime against the state. It's not a crime against us that he has committed. It's a crime against the state. And it's all very clear to you as a co-victim, as you want to call it, that is the case. You know, that we're only obliged within the judicial system to have, you know, a victim impact statement, which you can never really truly write what you want to write. So, yeah, it is doctored in ways like, you know, the defence might object to you saying that. And it's like, well,
oh, really? I never knew that. Hang on a second. Are you saying that your victim impact statement was seen and vetted by the defence before you got to read it?
Well, it possibly could do, yeah. But normally the people around you support you and say they might not like you saying that. Yeah, I just wanted to say I don't want your poison coming into our lives and staying here. I want to rid it now out of our lives.
And you were stopped from saying that much?
Yeah.
But I don't see what's legally contentious about that at all. I mean,
you'll hear if a few people who've asked you that. I mean, I don't know if you remember. The young lad who was murdered in court by his neighbour had the mother who fought for them when she wrote out the victim impact statement. I think that was the one she wrote out. She read out in court the victim impact statement she wanted to do and wanted to say. She swapped over the ones that had been okayed. Yeah, it happens to a few folks.
So when you get into this parole process again, what are you going to do this time? Are you actually going to send those letters?
I still don't know what to do. I still don't want to do it because I want to be heard, and I don't think they're saying, well, you know, what comes out is actually having the impact actually within the parole. He gets to read that. You know, again, it's almost... You know, I just think that if beforehand you had the opportunity, because not everybody has the opportunity to private counsellors who are in the proper field, you know, to help you to deal with such traumatic death and trauma. Just like being able to talk it through so that when you write that, you're clear in your mind and you're not just saying, look at the harm you've caused. That it's past that, that it's thought that, you know, yeah, really, you have impacted lives. You've impacted Alicia's cousin's life in England. You know, she found it very difficult to cope with, you know. And even the people who you know in the investigation, you know, you can see, you can read it in there that they are affected, you know. There's so many people who are brought into this picture of horror and just you just can't imagine that you're going to walk out one day and not come back, or that you're going to get called as a guard to some home and walk in and find the bodies of two babies and two children, you know.
Yeah, of course you can't. Well, I hope the talking here now has been of some help, some kind of therapy.
What I would really like is that, you know, people understand that we live our lives normally and we have laughs and we are just quite normal, but, like, there's moments when you get triggered and those are the times when it's really difficult to see a time when you're not going to be hurt by him.
Of course.
If you understand it.
Well, we need to be kind to you. We need to be generous, and not just at the funeral and the days after, but for a very, very long time afterwards. I think you've made that very clear.
I think that's what the parole is missing, is that just that empathy. It's all so clinical. It's all, you know, just set down in law, and this is it. You know, that we can't be emotive. And I think that's what's the thing. You can't be emotive in your victim impact statement. You can't be emotive within the court. You can't shout, you whatever. You can't do that. It's all like being silenced continually. And even when it comes to the parole review, you know, just being able to not have to face that for at least 12 years, after 12 years of peace.
Well, thank you for being brave enough to speak up now, Maria. And take care of yourself.
Thank you, Philip. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Now.